Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast, the podcast that brings you unwelcome nutritional information. Vince and I were just arguing about food, but we're not allowed to talk about that, apparently.
Because John is wrong.
I'm totally not.
And then it's just Vinton correcting John again, which apparently is a thing.
Dude, I will bet both my, I am betting both my kidneys on this.
Fine.
So look, right?
Go on.
The thing that I wanted to bring up, and as you're here, it's not a novelty. And can I just say that I really appreciate, so we've been doing this for 4 years or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that you have freely given your time in those 4 years. Mm-hmm. And it's been a big commitment from you. And I do appreciate that very much. Because really, out of the two of us, it's only really me that's gotten anything out of this. Apart from you saving on consultancy fees.
We don't talk about that. Free legal advice. So, what do you think about being an affiliate in Germany?
What would you say is the best path to navigate Canada's new market? And how do you spell that? No, I do appreciate it. Because if it had just been me, there would currently be no listeners.
I wouldn't be like that.
I'd be.
There'd be one. I'd be listening. Be
fine. I'd be talking to my duck. For anybody just listening to the audio, I have a giant rubber duck in my office. Yeah. So anyway.
Or is it a regular sized duck and just John's really small?
That's the thing, isn't it? Maybe this is all AI.
Ooh.
Speaking of which, today's guest, you weren't here for this interview, right? But I really, really enjoyed it, and you would have absolutely loved her. So today's episode, I've recorded it a few weeks ago. It's with, and I've been chasing this lady for ages. I'm so pleased we got her. Her name is Nazim Binesh. She's associate? Could be either. The ASS Professor, University of Florida, Division of Hospitality and Tourism. That's what my note says.
Assistant.
But it could be either.
Okay, true. Good point. All right.
But we had a really, really interesting conversation because Nazim did a report about ethics and the use of AI in the gambling industry. But it was also to look ahead,
okay.
To sort of say, yeah, let's not do this, let's not do that. And she talks about sort of transparency, fairness, accountability, privacy, all of those sort of little cornerstones, I suppose. It's a really interesting conversation. We've done quite a bit on AI recently. Mm. They all just fell at the same time. It wasn't planned. Anybody that's been listening to this podcast for more than 5 minutes knows that wasn't planned. It's good. And out of the two of us, Fintan, I think you should probably listen to it more than me because I was there.
Okay, that sounds fair.
So there's that. But something I was thinking about today, because I was reading this thing's just come out. The Gambling Commission in the UK has just done a report about the reasons why people gamble offshore.
Oh, yeah. And what have they concluded?
Well, it came under four things, but the thing is, I can't find the thing that I read again.
Do you want me to Google that for you?
Well, I tried Googling it earlier, right? Get this, right? I did a Google of Gambling Commission Why People Bet Offshore report. And the part that I can't get my head around is in the people also ask questions, it says, is it true that 90% of gamblers quit before they hit it big? Somebody fucking Googled that. I love it. But anyway, that's by the by. Four reasons, if I remember correctly. Okay.
Overview.
First reason.
Self-excluders.
First reason is self-exclusion.
who have chosen to self-exclude from all gambling websites licensed Great Britain by registering with GamStop.
I was just about to tell you this.
Skilled advocates. Individuals who knowingly and systematically engage with illegal websites, motivated by the desire to acquire new skills, use digital or foreign...
Is that an AI response?
So what they're saying is it's basically crypto kids, I think is what they're trying to say there.
Okay, what was reason three?
Social explorers, individuals who discover these websites through social networks and forums, often trialing them before committing to minimize risks. I think two and three are very, very similar groupings.
So three and four.
Accidental tourists, individuals who stumble upon illegal websites completely by chance and therefore unknowingly engage with the illegal online market.
Because they actually come under a different banner, which the GC hasn't put in there. And that's people who don't really give a fuck if it's regulated or not.
No, I would think of this like, you know, if you ever watch an older person use the internet and they just kind of bumble around and click everything, right? There's a whole cohort of people of just like oblivious. So I think you've got, so you'd kind
and
of.
And they're betting 4.3 billion a year, are they?
No, because it's going to be the self-excluded guys. And it's going to be the crypto bros.
Instead of calling them self-excluded, that feels really negative. Why don't we call them...
problem gamblers.
No. Again, that's very negative. Let's call them high-value offshore bettors.
Well, that's basically the thing, right? Because if you're... Sorry, my phone's on thingy. Yeah, right. It's the ones who are not going to stop. So there's that. It probably sidesteps the people who just don't want to provide documentation. I slipped over that one.
Which does remind me of that brilliant, that brilliant betting and gaming council video with the posh chap from the racing commentary stuff. Basically giving us a how-to and why you too should gamble offshore guide.
Oh, by, it was.
By showing us that you too can sign up in less than a minute and there are no checks.
What was that? Who was the English guy? He did the English Apprentice.
Alan Sugar.
Yeah, so his famous ad when he was importing tape players. His famous ad, his print ad. So he had these dual tape player stereos.
Yeah.
And his ad was a big warning saying, do not use this to copy tapes. That was his print ad. That was peak Alan Sugar and the smartest thing he's ever done. After that, he just took his money and stuck it into property and just became a landlord.
No, do you know what his big business is?
Being a landlord.
No, he makes all the hardware for Sky.
Still?
Yeah.
Didn't know that. That I didn't know. But yeah, that BCG ad kind of like if they'd have put some meat, like it does feel like, oh, this is so easy just to gamble.
I mean, it's just.
But I get the point they're trying to make. Like that's a, you know.
Fintan, I get the point they're trying to make because I'm a reasonably intelligent human being. But that also leads me to the same place where I look at that and go, how could you be so fucking stupid?
No, but it's like, dude, they don't have the reach. Like, there's no 18-year-old accidentally stumbling across that. Like, that's such
a... No, but all of the gambling industry's critics are. You might as well douse yourself in diesel and hand them a box of matches. Go, would you hold on to these for me for a minute? Thanks. I don't want to handle them because I'm covered in diesel. Sorry, dude. I'm not impressed. I'm just sore because they keep kicking me off their mailing list. It's not fair. Everybody else gets their emails. Anyway.
Are you not on their mail? Do you want me to send you on the emails?
I keep getting kicked off the mailing list. I'm not joking.
Do you really?
Every so often, I'll email and say, I don't see if you're getting your press release. And they go, oh, we'll put you on the list. Don't know how that happened. And I was linked to the main lady and we exchanged messages and now I'm not linked to her anymore.
Oh, no. Are we on a blacklist?
I think it's probably just me. But I'm not sure why. Well, I mean, I am sure why.
Fair idea. Good guess.
But I just thought, you know, I thought we were all grown-ups and you engage with your critics, but, you know, what do I know?
I was going to make a joke, but I can't.
Was it about me being a grown-up?
No, we'd be sued so hard.
Maybe we'll save that for the show notes.
I always think we should do like the live show with like all the stuff we can't say.
Man, that'd be hours long.
Some tickets.
Yeah, everybody signs an NDA. I'd be up for that. I would be up for that. Yeah, leave your phone at the door. Be like a 1990s nightclub. Okay, so look, we're going to get on and meet Nazim Binesh for a really interesting talk about AI and ethics. So enjoy the episode.
Well, hang on.
What?
We've got sponsors.
Well, you've already mentioned them, surely.
No, I haven't.
Well, but why haven't you?
Because you went straight to the episode.
Dude, I can't do everything.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Change the word everything for anything.
So this episode is brought to you by OptiMove. OptiMove would like you to know that they're going to be hosting an exclusive sweepstakes industry breakfast during G2E.
Ooh. So
if you're in at G2E and you're in the sweepstakes business, and let's be honest, if you're in the sweepstakes business, you should be at G2E. Head along to the OptiMove breakfast. There'll be a link in the show notes, as long as John remembers to put it in there. And that's a 50-50. But let me just click the link so we can tell you where to go.
Tell you where to go.
Oh, no, it's like a proper application form thingy. Yeah, you're going to have to put this in. Please click the link. And we top people from the industry, all the OptiMove crew there. And yeah, it'll be everything they do is great. So definitely worth popping along to.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Who else do we have, John?
That's a great question, Fintan, because it's something that I would like to read out to you. Would you like to pick this episode's accent?
Regular John.
That's the worst one. One of our other sponsors is the blessed Every Matrix, delivering advanced turnkey platform technology to the global regulated iGaming and lottery industries with outstanding results. Powering the world's biggest brands, solving your biggest challenges, taking your business to the next level. Every Matrix, everything is possible. That was a little flourish of my own there.
Really? That wasn't in the script?
It wasn't in the script.
Fuck.
I know. I think their marketing people are going to be delighted with that.
Yeah, just that little growl to everything they do now. Just tiger claws.
Exactly. It brands itself. And finally, of course, we have Clarion Gaming, who are gearing up for ICE, which is just a few months away now, in Barcelona in January. Well, we're all very excited about that, I think.
Absolutely.
You excited about that?
You know what? You know what else is happening during ICE Barcelona 2025?
Lots of things, I would think.
Gamblingbookawards.com.
Holy shit, that's us.
We're doing the Gambling Book Awards, where we're going to be awarding big cash prizes to the number one gambling-related book in the world. We're also awarding prizes to the number one gambling industry journalist.
We are.
Because we love words. We love writers. We love things
giving
like
people
this,
things.
And we want to reward and celebrate that.
Yeah, we do. It's a crazy prize, that one.
It's, yeah, look, these are legit prizes. We benchmark to the FT and the Booker. We're doing proper prizes, proper judging panel. You know, we're going to fly them to Spain. We're going to host them. There's going to be an awards. There's going to be...
This is the authors. So the authors will be the shortlisted authors will be flown to Barcelona for the event and the prize.
And we've kind of assumed the journalists are already going to be there because it's us.
Yeah.
But we're
not flying them there.
We'll see. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see. We'll see.
But the
maybe
journalist,
we just charter a plane and get it over with.
The industry journalist one is really interesting because, I mean, it's a significant prize. Do you remember how much we said?
I was probably a couple of Negronis deep at the time. What did I sign off on?
Four grand.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's good. Oh, thanks, John.
So the gambling industry B2B journalist of the year wins £4,000, and I think two runners-up get 500 each.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you're with one of the many media outlets in the industry, and you want to nominate one of your colleagues, well, hell, even yourself, I can't stop you.
Yeah,
hang on, I do make the rules, don't I? But
proud of your work, stick it in.
Send it in. We will judge you. But have a look at the Gambling Book Awards website, and that's got the criteria for entrance on that. But if you're, a part of the industry, operator, supplier, whatever, and there's somebody that you think is outstanding, then please shout about them. Because there are a couple of other awards out there, and, one of them certainly is asking for 10 years of experience or whatever. Screw that. Somebody might have come from another industry or whatever. But this is just, they're good, let's shout about them.
Best journalism of last year.
Totally.
For sure.
So bring it on. I nearly said bring it on, motherfuckers, but then I reined myself in because that would be rude.
And you're nothing but professional.
Hell yes. I'm glad you recognise that, finally. God. Anyway, on to the episode and meet Nazim Binesh. Enjoy. We meet this week's guest, and I have been pursuing this guest for months. And that's not to say that, she's not flaky. She hasn't been letting me down or anything like that. She's just busy. And I'm delighted, I'm really genuinely delighted to have you on. Joined by Nazim Binesh, who's the Assistant Professor at University of Florida, the Division of Hospitality and Tourism. Is there a further bit onto that?
No, we're just within the College of Health and Human Performance, which is quite ironic considering the tourism hospitality aspect of it.
Yeah. I've got a feeling that one of our past guests has had some dealings with... Do you know Michael Beteto?
I think so. The name rings a bell. But first of all, let me thank you for having...
whisper about him.
Yeah, well, first let me thank you for having me. It took us months to finally figure things out. And actually right now I have a babysitter at home, so we can make this happen because my fall schedule got changed all of a sudden. I was supposed to be teaching Tuesdays and Thursdays, and that's what we initially planned based on. But then it shifted to completely different Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So here we go.
Hey, I'm just really grateful that you're here.
Thank you.
100% don't need to explain yourself to me. I'm just like, yay. really, really pleased to have you on here. So back in, hang on, I can pinpoint when I saw this. End of May, I saw a news story which came out of the university about AI. And the headline was, AI is transforming gambling, but what are the ethical risks? A University of Florida researcher explores. And that researcher turns out to be you.
Yeah.
So that's lucky. or you could call it great journalism on my part. No, it's lucky. First things first. So the news story pointed me towards the study that you did, which was published in the International Journal of Hospitality and Tourism Administration, which is a very catchy publication name, possibly only topped by the Journal of Conflict Resolution, which I don't think is published anymore. I think they all fell out. If anybody that's read that book behind me, the biography of Connie Converse, actually worked on the Journal of Conflict Resolution, which is why that was in my head. Anyway, by the by. So you published this study, but what did you find in the study? What did you study? How did you study it? And where did you end up?
Sure. So let me give you a little bit of background about myself first on like how I ended up doing what I'm doing right now. So my background is completely different. I was a student when I was a bachelor degree student in statistics, and that was my background. Later on, I got an MBA. So I was into, you know, more like a business side of things. And that led me to this paper that I did on hotels and how the customer reviews can affect the way that we perceive hotels if we want to, you know, go back to them and things like that. And at the time, I didn't know that hospitality and tourism could be a field that you could be studying. And I didn't know there could be like a PhD in that area. So after I finished my MBA in Malaysia, I co-founded a company that we were offering consulting services to different businesses, including hospitality and tourism. And at the time, I realized this is a very fun thing, and I actually enjoy doing that. And I heard through a friend of mine that people get PhDs in this area. And I thought, wow, this is something I want to explore. So I applied to the PhD program in Las Vegas at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Great program. One of the best decisions that I ever made. And after getting there, I realized how big gambling was. And I always wanted to do something gambling related, but the way that my dissertation went and afterwards I had so many papers based on that I was working on never led me a moment to actually focus on that. So until a friend of mine from UNL reached out to me, Castro, he reached out to me and said, hey, I have an idea. Let's do this thing. We can look into the AI ethics and the gambling aspect. I was like, yeah, let's do it. This is what I wanted to do in a long time too. So we started working on that. And from that came a series of publications and talks. We talked at G2E. We talked at Gaming Laboratories International. And one of the things that we were initially looking into was just identifying what are these risks and potential problems that AI can cause in the gambling industry. So gambling industry by itself is very risky. It's very controversial, right? When you talk about that, people always think about, maybe the casinos are, you know, taking away our money. We're not sure how everything is going.
The essence of gambling is risk.
Exactly. That's how it is, right? So when you add AI to the mix, it makes it even more, I should say, complicated, right? Because then people are like, we don't even know if right now the house edge is even more imbalanced because AI is included into the mix. So these were the things that we wanted to look into. And we started with just looking at the literature, what was out there, and then we interviewed experts from different areas. I don't want to bore you with all of the details of...
But we like being bored on this podcast.
Okay, perfect. So I can tell you all about the research part. So we talked to them and we identified six major risks that exist. But if I want to talk about the main ones, I would say we looked into transparency, fairness, accountability, and privacy. And I think these are the four main ones. There are other elements out there too, like human in the loop. But if you think about AI and gambling, if you want to make it responsible by design, then you have to consider these four aspects that I just mentioned.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was recording something. I was recording an intro for the previous episode earlier.
Yeah.
And we had an interim stand-in co-host. No, hang on, a stand-in interim co-host. That's right. And we got talking about blind boxes. I'm sure you're familiar with the retail principle of a blind box. And in gaming, loot boxes, very similar. Yes. And I was saying that the problem with blind boxes is that there is a complete lack of transparency. Mm-hmm. You're told that something is scarce and special, but you don't know what the distribution of that is.
That is correct, yes.
And that, as a consumer, and as somebody in the gambling industry, that feels inherently dishonest. That feels like I'm being fucked with, frankly. And then that leads me emotionally to questioning the fairness of this. Mm-hmm. And am I just being quite literally milked for money, you know? So I think it's interesting. Transparency and fairness are inextricably linked.
That is true.
For certainly for players. And they both lead to accountability. Privacy, is that really important? Does anybody really have any privacy anymore? Once you sign up to Facebook, isn't it gone?
Well, you have to also consider the gambling data is very sensitive. So it's protecting both the players and also the companies. That's why it's very hard to get access to casino data for research purposes, for example. They always are very hesitant about sharing that data. And that's also why that, like, you see that a lot of hotels are falling, let's say, these analytics that are provided by different companies. Like there's a company, STR, that gets the hotel data, but casinos and casino hotels don't share their data even with those, you know, analytics companies. So in a sense, it's protecting both the players and the casino corporations. But at the same time, you want to know that we want to create an AI system that can protect the customers and not exploit them. And that's where the data comes from.
But yeah, I get what you're saying about data, and it's the same for online and all of that. So how did you do your study, if it's not a stupid question?
Of course, yeah. So with this one, we started with more like foundational work because there's not much done yet. When I started looking into the literature, one of the things that I realized that we don't have any actual guidelines. We don't have, at the time, we didn't have any AI regulation and policies. There was some movement happening in Europe, I know that, you know, with all of the data protection there, and they were starting to incorporate some of that into gambling platforms as well. But here in the United States, we were still behind, and we are still behind. We are still trying to figure out how are we going to do this. Operators and regulators are still trying to wrap their heads around what AI is. How do we define that? I've seen a lot of corporations using AI as a buzzword recently, like, oh, we have AI this, we have AI that. A lot of those are actually not AI driven. A lot of those are, let's say, just pure statistics, and they don't have any elements of like machine learning or deep learning embedded in them, but they still claim them as being AI because it's just a catchy word these days and everybody uses that. So that was the foundation, that was the original research. And building on that, there were a lot of work that were done was done on how this ethical aspect of AI is gonna evolve in the upcoming years. So one of the things that I'm looking into right now is trying to, through my lab. So I've established an initiative, an independent lab, responsible AI in society, RAISE. And that's one of the areas that I'm looking into, how we can create responsible AI, not just for gambling, but for tourism, hospitality, and society in a general sense. And this involves looking into the human AI collaboration aspect, looking into the long-term trust and how customer trust is built, what are the factors, what are the psychological foundations for that. And also, I have been working on a project recently that we can talk about it in a little bit more detail, but I'm trying to get a patent for that. So it's a little bit like more like trade secret. I can't share all of the information about it. We are trying to find a solution so we can act before the problem happens. So in this sense, like before problem gambling actually happens, we can detect that. That's the goal. These are some of the things that I'm right now working on, and all are related to that, what we were talking about, the AI ethics.
Well, I don't know where to go now.
I know, right? Do you want to talk about the don't miss the signs? That's a catchy one. The one that I'm working on.
So, you've explained the risks that are your sort of your pillars, if you like, in your report, right? But going back to your initial report, because we will get everywhere else, I promise. Going back to your initial report, I feel like I'm missing a step here, right?
No problem.
So I know what the pillars are.
We were talking about the report, and it looks at the pillars and the risk and some solutions to mitigate them.
But what conclusions did you come? Because here's the thing, right? I know how difficult it is to get information out of government companies. Believe me, I really do. But given the difficulties of finding the information that you need, and we're also, if we're talking about the use of AI, we're talking about operational information, which blood out of a stone is far easier. So how did you get around that? And what did you conclude from what you found out? How did you actually do it? I mean, and if you're giving away operational questions, it's fair enough if you can't go into it, but I'm intrigued by both the outcome of the report, which we haven't touched yet, and how you actually got to that, given the issues that you've already touched on.
Sure. So you've got a good point, John. What we did was we interviewed experts. We talked to researchers, operators, and regulators. And we had a set of questions, and sometimes we added some questions, and we improvise as we went. But mainly we were looking at the risks and ethical considerations of AI during specifically AI system development cycle. So this is a cycle that starts from conceptualization and goes all the way to development, right? And we were looking and trying to pinpoint risks that could happen at each of those stages and what were some of the solutions that they could think of. And we also came up with some solutions ourselves based on our own research.
So is this to a large degree a forward-looking
idea?
So you're not looking at things that are already going wrong. You're saying, here's where we don't want to go. We don't want Westworld or Jurassic Park, actually. We don't want any Michael Crichton outcomes at all.
Well, Jurassic Park, the new movie, seems to be very successful. I haven't watched it. I don't know if it's good or not, but
I actually went
in the box office.
I've been to see it twice.
Was it good? It must have been good.
I went the first time and I was like, yeah, it was all right. But then it's summer holidays here and the kids really wanted to see it. And it's a 12A. My oldest is 12, then 10, and then 8. And I was worried about the 8-year-old.
I see.
But actually, they loved it. And the 8-year-old only climbed into my lap right at the end.
Aww.
But yeah, they liked it. But the second time I was watching it, what I noticed was film companies, they're getting really lazy. Not just with shitty recycled stories. Because, my God, this is the seventh time we've seen this story?
I agree.
Not just with recycled stories, but there is some really lazy computer-generated animation in this film. Yeah. Really lazy. Relying on the screen being big and what's happening being quite small in it, and you're like, seriously, dude? I was seeing better animation than that on a Super Nintendo in 1994. Just saying.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's the thing about this podcast, Nazim. We get sidetracked.
It's fine. I love movies.
What's your favorite? Do you have one?
It's really hard to pick. There are so many good classics. I would say maybe Godfather is the first one that comes to mind. What else? There's so many good movies like Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the classics.
Did you ever read the autobiography of Robert Evans?
No, I haven't.
He's a producer, a legendary producer, and he ran Paramount when Godfather was made.
Interesting.
And it's a really, really interesting period because, I mean, he's a hell of a character. There's a documentary as well, which is based on.
Yeah, the book. I watched a documentary. It wasn't a documentary. They just made like a TV series that it's based on how Godfather was made.
Okay. What Evans talks about in the book's called The Kid Stays in the Picture, and it's a really good read. He even talks about Jack Nicholson's hemorrhoids at one point. But anyway, but he talks about Godfather. He talks about Coppola delivering a 90-minute cut.
Mm-hmm.
And Evan saying, this is not what we talked about. Go away and re-edit it. Tell the story. And out comes what we all know and love. But that Coppola, I find it amazing that Coppola thought he couldn't just deliver that story. He neutered it. I mean, can you imagine a 90-minute cut of The Godfather? Mm. But yeah, I really do recommend the Evans book. It's very, very good.
Yeah, I should check that out.
That period of cinema is absolutely amazing.
It is. They don't make rules. Movies like that. Maybe the closest could be Christopher Nolan these days, that he's still, making interesting movies. We were talking about the report. Where were we?
Yeah. What conclusions did you come to in the report? What were your...
So, of course.
What
this
were the
was
big issues?
So the biggest issue I could tell you right away is that we didn't have any regulations in place. We are working on that. There are some regulations that recently are coming out. We see that in Europe and America, but still it's not comprehensive, and it's not, and especially in America, the way that jurisdictions work here is like state by state. So you have to also wait and see if all of these states are going to be following, and they're going to be, just coming up with their own version of the new regulations.
But the other issue as well is that the speed at which AI is mutating, and I'm pretty sure mutating is the right word, is like AI compared to what it was 12 months ago is completely different now.
That is true. Recently, just ChatGPT came out with their latest version, ChatGPT-5, and they claim it's like the best thing ever, it's actually rapidly changing, and we also see changes in its application in the gaming industry. I've seen that corporations are embracing that in so many ways. Online platforms, online gambling was probably the first that started using it. They have been using it for retaining and, kind of using it for like marketing purposes and checking the customer information, more like giving them suggestions, like the way that you open your Netflix, and it gives you some suggestions based on the movies that you have watched. So it says, based on your profile, we think that you're going to be interested in this new movie, right? The same thing in the online gaming platforms. They are like based on using the customer data. They can say, oh, maybe you're going to be interested in this new poker game that we have designed, or like this new blackjack game. So this is one of the first ways that they started implementing that. But now we are also seeing ways that we are thinking about how we can actually take this one step further and create intervention systems that use AI as their base. Because technology itself, John, is not either good or bad. It's the way that we use it, right? If you think about any technology, like if you think about the atomic bomb, it could have been used in a very environmentally friendly just for creating energy, for example, right? But just give it to the, wrong people or in like a wrong time, and then it can be used in a very catastrophic way. And that's one of the things that you see pretty much with any innovation that has happened throughout the human history. AI is not an exception. So the way I see this is that it can be used for good purposes. We can, for example, target, and we can actually kind of pinpoint those customers and those players that are showing some problem gambling tendencies even before it actually happens. But at the same time, we can use it to exploit them. We can use it to even after they have been spending so many hours on the platform, spending so much money and losing so much, we could still try to get them and play the next game, right? So these are the ways that it can go either, you know, good or bad, and can go right or wrong. And these are inherently, it's not based on like AI is bad or AI is good. It's just the way that we use it. This is the balancing act. So one of the things that we came up with was this balancing act of AI, how we can use this technology in a positive way that it creates a more responsible technology that is better for the human society.
Okay. Some of what you were talking about there rang bells with me. A few years ago, I was working with Necton, who sold to OpenBet. Couple of years ago, working with Dr. Auer and stuff. And I was just helping them out with like releases and telling stories and placing articles and things like that. But they were, you know, they were certainly bigging up AI and the use of AI for real-time data analysis and reacting to that data. And that's the key, isn't it? It's the reaction. It's not just seeing the data. It's what are we going to do about it when we see it? And pattern detection and response. I mean, the response is almost like if then, isn't it? If they're doing this, then we do that. Mm-hmm. Or you know, you can tailor things to a certain extent. But what I think is potentially really interesting about what you're talking about and the potential for the future is that if somebody is demonstrating disordered behaviors, and I speak as somebody who is in possession of quite a few of those, you can potentially, using AI and your setup, change their entire playing experience. You could potentially, if somebody is showing, say they like high volatility play.
Yeah.
But they're doing all the other classic markers. So say, for example, a gambler from Asia might do exactly that, right? But might be gambling in a perfectly healthy way for themselves in enjoying high volatility, right? And say they then start showing other markers of harm. You could potentially change that player's whole environment in real time. Steer them away from the products that you know are going to be triggering, that you know are going to be enveloping for them. And so it's not necessarily, oh God, we have to get these players off the platform. It's we have to divert these players from the things that are going to fuck them up and say to them, look, you know, because all of these things can be done without a player even knowing it's happening. Just take them to a safer space. Because the thing is, and if I remember right, there was a paper on this a couple of years ago. But a player will show, you know, all online operators will say, well, we've got 30 days and we'll have a look at how that player's behavior goes within 30 days. If a player has disordered gambling patterns, they'll show you within 30 seconds, never mind 30 days. So your assessment starts when they sign up.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody that works at a major operator recently, and I said, why don't you gamify part of the sign-up process and have that as the beginning of risk assessment? You have to give them something that's worth winning or that they will hate to lose, but then you know what kind of player they are straight away, or you've got the first step on that ladder before they've even made a deposit.
Yeah, like similar to the way that Apple Music works, right? It asks you like what type of genre you're into, like who are your favorite artists, so you can kind of say.
That pisses me off so much. I hate that. I do. I hate it. I like finding new stuff.
So see, you just said, okay, so you're saying they should sign them up, but at the same time, you're saying you wouldn't like that yourself.
Basically, yeah, I am not their customer. But I'm the same with Netflix. It's like yeah. I grew up in the golden age of teen movies. So like even now, I will watch teen movies, which I appreciate, probably a bit odd for a middle-aged man. But I love teen movies. So, but like Netflix is not going to recommend teen movies to me.
Yeah, but you can watch Wednesday.
I am totally going to. I'm looking forward to it. Really enjoyed the first season.
Yeah, it was fun. I think this is like goes back to what I was just talking about. Like one of the projects that I'm currently working on is creating this early intervention system.
Yeah.
That can detect problem gambling signs before it actually happens. Because you also love movies. Do you remember Minority Report?
Yeah, it was excellent. Really, really good.
Excellent movie, right?
So his second best movie.
His second best movie, yeah. So what? One of the main idea of the movie was, so he was part of this futuristic police force, right? That they could see the future and the crime before it happens. And they could catch people even when the thought of, you know, committing that crime came to their mind, even like before it act actually happened, right? So the analogy is there. Obviously, we're not talking about crime here. We're talking about problem gambling. But I use it as an analogy to try to show you how this intervention system is going to work. So instead of waiting for problem gambling signs to actually show themselves, like, oh, look, for, you know, like spending too much money, you feel like you're already broke, you have a lot of debt. No, we want to be able to detect that before it actually happens. So by creating these windows of high risks, probability of something going wrong, so we can provide early intervention. And this is going to be replacing the static situation that we see that is more reactive, and we want to make it more proactive, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. Totally does. I had a brilliant thought back in there, and it's completely gone clean out of my head. It does happen. That's occasionally.
Okay. Happens to me all the time.
I'm old.
We are all getting old, John.
Yeah, but luckily I've got my kids there to tell me I'm old. Do you know what my middle son did the other day? We were out on a field and he was playing with some of his mates. And he comes up to me, brings his bottle. It's like a drinks bottle.
Yeah.
He brings his bottle over to me, just hands it to me in front of these other parents. And he just goes, "You failed. The straw's fallen out." Like, that's brutal.
I don't know where he got it from.
Fucking grounded, I tell him that much. Until he's 35. it's right. So we're talking about. Oh yeah, so I know what I was thinking about. So the thing is with AI, right? There is gross misunderstandings of what it is and what it does and how it can work.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some understandings which are perfect because obviously it does have some very broad and very public applications, and the way that it's changing how search engines work is fucking hilarious. But I was reading a news story the other day, and it was about how AI had been used to develop antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
To deal with antibiotic resistant viruses. So AI has developed, and this still blows my mind, AI has developed an antibiotic that will deal with MRSA.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me tell you something, because we were talking about this. So this whole AI in medicine has been there for a long time. When was the last time you got an MRI or like an x-ray, or, you know, you had to deal with a radiologist?
Never. I'm perfect.
Perfect. So if you did, one of the things that you would see is that very often they have this AI algorithm that reads the scan for them first before the doctor signs on it. So they still have a doctor that signs what the AI has told them, but the AI algorithm is so good that it's almost 100% accurate, 99.9, something like that. It's very accurate. And there are just like a few situations that it might not, you know, get the best results. And they have seen that even sometimes it is better than humans in detecting things. Like sometimes the human doctor could not see things, or like it couldn't, you know, detect some of the early signs when the algorithm could. So in a sense, it's been there and it's been used for a long time. But I think the main reason that now everybody's all of a sudden talking about AI is because of the large language models.
Yeah, totally.
Because of the ChatGPT, you know, and similar AI, I should say, chatbot systems that we see. So these are the ones that actually made everybody realize, oh my God, like this exists. I remember that when I was taking a course in data science, when was that? 6, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. We looked at into all of the machine learning, you know, models and deep learning, and all of the, all existed even back then. But the whole invention of OpenAI and the whole idea of like having a personal assistant at your disposal, that you're like, I want to write a message to my nanny. These are the things to please take care of while I'm recording a podcast. Instead of me having to make sure that it's perfected, right? So I'm like, I want you to do this and do that, and please be polite and kind and considerate. This is fabulous. I don't have to worry about, you know, typing it while I'm driving. So these are the things that we have seen recently, and people have thought, oh my God, this is brilliant, this whole AI thing. But in reality, it's been there for a long time.
I've used it myself to summarize transcripts, which has been an absolute godsend.
Yes.
But I get it's been there a long time. My point is really that AI can be used to very simply review data faster than a person can, and to spot things that a human won't. And I think a lot of that's become forgotten because of the large language model, etc. And that's the large language model is almost like the acceptable face of AI now, whereas in fact in the background it's doing shitloads of good stuff. Because the other, and I hope I'm not going to say it's going to horrify any listeners when I say this, but the other antibiotic resistant thing that it was talking about, so this news report said MRSA, which I'm still stunned by, that's amazing, and gonorrhea. So like within, what, 10 years, clinical trials, 7, 8 years maybe, these things will be not necessarily a thing of the past, but they'll be fightable.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And my brother's going to be over the moon. Sorry. Luckily, he doesn't listen to the podcast, so that's good. you mentioned earlier race.
Yes.
Okay, tell me about race. This is your thing.
This is my thing. So RAISE is an independent initiative that I started. So the name comes from Responsible AI in Society. And the idea here is to create AI systems that are responsible, transparent, and fair. The whole idea of race came to me when I was working on all of these, you know, as we were talking about different projects. And I thought one key thing that is missing is that we don't have an actual, guideline on how we can create these systems in a way that we call them responsible. And first of all, how do we define this responsible AI thing? So this research lab is focused on different projects that are all focused on creating responsible AI systems. It starts with defining what this responsibility means, what are the risks and how we can mitigate them, and then moves forward with trying to find some solutions on how we can, for example, create early detection and prevention in the gambling industry. And it also goes beyond that and looks into the overall tourism and hospitality, like as far as like human AI, human robot interaction goes.
Do they have a series called Robot Wars in the US?
Yes.
Okay. I worked on Robot Wars magazine for a little while in the UK.
How was that?
It was interesting. I got fired for reasons that I cannot possibly tell you because it's quite a rude story. But it was an unjustifiable firing, in my opinion. I won't go into the details, but I was eating my breakfast. I dropped a bit of egg. I muttered a rude exclamation to myself, and the person sitting next to me heard it and kicked off.
Okay. So they don't allow that?
I guess not.
The robots hopefully I
won't bump into them again.
Don't say bad words.
Because they'll probably be quite upset if I tell them they're twats. Yeah. In our notes, when we book guests on this, we send them a little questionnaire, and I brought up Robot Wars because you have a class called Robots, Threat or Opportunity. Do you build battle bots in your class? And if not, why not?
I wish we did. The idea of a robot class came to me as soon as I joined UF. I've always been fascinated with sci-fi movies, stories. And for a long time, I was like fascinated with the whole idea of like, if we could one day have robots amongst us, right? When I joined UF, I was one of the AI scholars. So UF is very much focused on AI, and they started this AI initiative. And they were hiring scholars that are researching anything AI. It could be in journalism, it could be in engineering, it could be in the field that I am. So I was one of those people. And as soon as I joined the program, I looked into their curriculum and I looked at the classes that they had. Given my background, the research that I had on human-robot interaction, when I was doing my PhD in Las Vegas, I was working on a service robot. This made me think and look into if there's any course related to robotics for the general education level. So these are the undergrads that come into the university. They don't know exactly what they want to do. They are, you know, exploring different options. And these are the part of the courses that they can just try and see if that's going to be something interesting to them, right? And I realized there was not a single class that was focused on AI nor robotics. So the idea came to me. I was like, okay, I want to do this. And I designed and developed the curriculum for the class. And I came up with different modules and activities. I wish we could have this whole, you know, developing a robot for robot war. Actually, I looked into working with different robotic companies and see if they're going to be lending anything to our classroom, because these technologies can be very expensive. Unfortunately, none of them were interested. Maybe one day. But the idea of a class is that to look at the situation and the current development in the AI and robotics. What are the threats and opportunities that comes with that? Going back to what we were talking about, the balancing act, right? We're still trying to figure out if how we can use this technology in a good or bad way, right? And it starts with very fundamental history and like what are the definition of AI, robotics, machine learning, where's the overlap? Not everything is a robot. Not everything is defined actually as AI, even though we use all of these terms interchangeably, right? And then they look into all of the different applications. And in some of the modules, they also get some hands-on experience. The beauty of the course is, though, because it's open to students from any background. So I had students from engineering, but at the same time, students from business, history, right? Tourism, hospitality. There were some that wanted to go to med school. The idea is that they don't need any coding experience, no coding background, but they still were able to create a chatbot just by some simple, platforms that we use in the classroom. I wanted to teach them how the, machine thinking, machine algorithms work, right? This is one of the basic things, that how does the actual algorithm work, in a sense of like, where is the starting point, what is the output, and how this whole logical system work, and understanding the logic behind it. And they did a fascinating job. They could understand that, oh, as if you want to develop a chatbot, we should have an input, we should ask them a question first, right? And then the robot is gonna give you some answer. And then how this back and forth goes, where are the areas that they could maybe add an if clause in there, like if the user said this, then respond with this other, text. So these are some of the things that we looked into. And then we later on, by the last modules, we looked at the future of workplace, how their careers are going to look like in the next upcoming years. There's a very good report that comes out every year, and it looks at the future of workplace and career based on the latest developments in technology and innovation. And in that report, you can see that, for example, what human skills are going to be most valued in the next upcoming years, and which jobs are more under threat of being completely, vanished from Earth, or they're just going to be like suffering because of the latest developments. So we also, every year, we look at that and we try to pinpoint some strategies for them to kind of improve themselves, right? How they can use AI as a tool and not be, scared by it. The other day, one of my PhD students came to me. He has no knowledge of coding, and he had done some interesting machine learning analysis. And I was like, how did you do this? He was like, oh, I was trying to, look into ChatGPT, and it gave me some codes, and I tried to learn how I can run this in Python. And I was like, this is fascinating. If it can actually give the students some courage to touch some of the areas that they always felt intimidated by it, like coding in Python, like something he had not done before.
Yeah,
I think that's very useful. But at the same time, I've seen situations that, students just write their homework using ChatGPT. We don't want that, obviously.
No.
Yeah.
But then just imagine all those things that you just described poured into battle bots.
Yeah.
And it could be a good fundraiser for the university. Also, would it even count as gambling if people are allowed to put bets on their robots?
Yeah, probably we're not allowed to do that, but it makes it definitely more interesting.
No, but the people that have bought tickets could do that.
They could.
Just throwing it out there. Because I know a lot of universities are struggling these days.
The robotic soccer games happen annually. I remember that initially they used to have these Sony Aibo dogs, if you remember those.
Yeah.
And then they replaced them with Now. It's like a, mini humanoid, and it has more capabilities.
It still sounds terrible. Give me BattleBots any day of the week.
Sure. Maybe I should sign you up to help me with developing the curriculum for the.
I'm one of those people I make a significant chunk of my living as a writer.
Yeah.
And people often say to me, aren't you worried about AI taking your job? And I'm like, if you've ever read anything I've written, you'd understand, no, I'm not even slightly worried about it. Because the human brain is
fascinating.
A very, very, well, I would say it's an impossible thing to replicate. Now, my experiences and the combination of those experiences is unique. And I've spent 30 years getting to the point where I can articulate those in a way that is very distinct. You could train something to write a bit like me,
mm-hmm.
but without those experiences, it's not the same thing.
That is true.
It's fan fiction versus the real thing.
Yeah. So after having my daughter, she's 1.5 now. It's just so fascinating to see how human brain works, like how she's developing and learning things as she grows. And she can mimic us so easily now. Like anything we do, she does. Even like when we tell her no, she just says the same thing with us, you know, like mocking us. No, no, no. You know, it's been a very interesting journey in a sense of like, I can see how human brains start developing. Because if our brains were supposed to be like completely developed by the time we were born, babies were, they had to stay in the womb for about 2 years. And logically and biologically, efficient. Yeah, it doesn't work. So that's why when they are born, they can't do anything other than...
Well, you know, how many other mammals can't walk within a couple of days? Not many, right? In fact, none is the answer.
Mammals, actually, they do.
What? Like, mammals? Which mammals can't walk within a couple of days?
Oh, like can't. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I said can't.
It's only humans.
Course. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Everything else is sorted. We're the weak link.
Yeah, it's not even a week. Sometimes, like right away, they have to run away from whatever predator is after them.
Or in some instances, run away from their parents.
That too. You never know.
And yet here we are with our opposable thumbs, just living our best lives.
Yeah.
But no, I get what you mean. And sort of having a dog as well. It's really similar to having a child, and unfortunately I've got both.
We don't have a dog, we have a cat, and he's not that smart, so I don't have that much experience in this area.
I've got a really smart cat.
And he's You're lucky. Just, ours is dumb.
My cat's an absolute diamond. But it's really, really interesting, the sort of, and there's a degree of kind of almost like coding with this, where you're setting boundaries, and you have this little free-spirited organism which is just bashing into those boundaries at every possible to test. It's like having a test robot, a test battle robot in a battle arena, and it's just throwing itself around and seeing what breaks, the dog and the children.
Yeah, I remember that. I read an article years ago, maybe 1 or 2 decades ago. It was about creating harmony from chaos. And it was this idea of like they have implemented this robot that was just moving some boxes in a very random pattern. And throughout the time, even though there was no, you know, like machine learning algorithm in it or anything like that, it was just like a robot that was not intelligent. Through time, they realized that the robot was creating patterns in the sense of like how it moves one box from the other. And then gradually it started creating clusters of boxes. And that was always fascinating to me, that how does harmony actually start? Like, well, how did we for the first time realize that we could make fire, for example, right? Same idea, like when and how does this aha moment that happens, that then this entity starts realizing or like starts showing some sort of harmony or some sort of like, I should say, creating balance compared to the chaos that it comes from.
I really can't answer that question.
Yeah, me neither. But it's a very interesting thought. And if one day maybe these algorithms can start not thinking independently, but like, you know, starting to show some sort of like maybe different reasoning that we thought they were supposed to be having, if that makes sense.
I think in every, you know, sports is a really good example of this. Every so often, there will be somebody in sports who will take things to a level that you haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Michael Jordan's an obvious one. Tiger Woods is a really obvious one. And they changed the game. In snooker, Ronnie O'Sullivan. In football,
Messi, Ronaldo.
I'd actually say the one that we now affectionately call Fat Ronaldo. he was the first one where everybody went, what
the fuck? From Brazil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he opened that door for people to just do these ridiculous things, and Messi has taken it further.
Yeah.
But it's like that geezer who reaches that level where they seem to be playing an entirely different game. LeBron James is another great example. Jordan opened the door. James fucking smashed his way through it. And these people, they elevate these things, but their appearance is unpredictable. Their appearance is completely arbitrary. And they're people that see things in a different way. They're lateral thinkers very often. Mm-hmm. They are not people who think about limitations, etc. They might go against type. I mean, is it Steph Curry, the great three-pointer? Nobody would have gone for Lionel Messi because he was tiny. Yes. Yeah, Barcelona effectively made a team of dwarves at one point. They won everything, which was completely anathema to everything in football at the time. And so very often when these things appear, they are not obviously what they become. And I do feel it's kind of the same thing with technology, you know, and you've only got to look at the mobile phone, and the example that I always throw up on this podcast is, you know, Nokia didn't think SMS was going to be anything. They weren't going to put it in there. It turned out to be the main reason that mobile phones got adopted by teens. People will surprise you. And they will surprise you with how they develop things, because no matter how something is created, once it is put out there, people will use it in a different way. And it's like art. It's like art. When you make art, if it's a painting, if it's a book, if it's a movie, whatever, you can make it with one message, one intention, one meaning, which is yours from within. It's your creative expression.
But people will find other meanings in it.
As soon as somebody sees it, it's not yours anymore.
Yeah.
It's theirs because it's got them in it, within them, and that's a new world and a new existence for that thing. And it is the same for technology. People will take these technologies and they will take them in ways that we cannot possibly predict.
That is true. It could be either good or bad, right? Yeah, this is one of
Who the hell would... I know I'm stating the bleeding obvious here, but when I saw that people were making celebrity deepfake porn, I was like, have you really got nothing better to do with your computer than that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, one other thing that I saw recently was that there's an AI generated podcast.
The whole podcast right now.
The whole podcast is AI generated. And it was very fascinating. They just pick a topic every week or so. I don't remember if it was a weekly or something. And then they have virtual guests too.
Oh, fuck.
I was like, this is very interesting. Who listens to this though?
This is something when I was talking with Mel earlier about blind boxes and stuff, we got into how we are creating simulations of experiences. So you might find a community on social media, but that's not the same as mixing with actual people. It's an approximation, and that's all. And it does not do the same things mentally and emotionally. And I feel the same about what you're saying now. It's like, yes, it will create a podcast. The reason that we do this podcast the way that we do it is because it can go in any direction whatsoever. And we don't edit it so that people can see this is a long flowing conversation, and there are usually reasons why it goes in its various directions. And you can follow that path with us.
It's like a journey.
Exactly. And what you're talking, I mean, a friggin' AI podcast, I mean.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a motivational quote calendar, frankly. I've got no room for one of those either. Nazim, what is Tom Cruise's best film? And it's got to be a lead role. Not, so you can't have Tropic Thunder, you can't have Magnolia, you can't have The Outsiders or Taps.
I would say, I think the whole, those few, so he, the way he works is like, he used to work was like, he would film one Mission Impossible. Then 3 or 4 years, he would film some of other projects to do something different. Yep. I think right after the first one came out or the second one, he had so many good projects. It was the Minority Report. It was the Collateral. What was that? Collateral or something like that?
Yeah, the Michael Mann film.
Yeah, and then there was... that one was not as good, and he wasn't the lead role, but it was The Interview with the Vampire. Oh, The Last Samurai. That was a really good movie, too. But in the more recent ones, I think he has just got so much in... He just enjoys stunts too much that he's just focused on that. He was...
Oh, he's clearly going to die.
Yeah, that's what they say every time. So he was in the process of... working with Warner Brothers to make Deeper. It's a movie about, obviously it's like the same idea from the last, like, did you watch this Final Reckoning movie that came out, the Mission Impossible?
Yeah, I did. My God, it was long.
It was long. So there's like a part that he goes under the water in the submarine. I guess he enjoyed that too much that he wants to make a movie that is all about that. For now, that movie is canceled because the budget was probably too much, but we'll see. I'm sure he will find a way to make it.
Yeah. So listen, for my money, the best movie with Tom Cruise in a lead role, because the best movie is probably The Outsiders. Second best movie is probably Tropic Thunder. But his best movie with him in a lead role, I would say, and I think when I say this, you're actually going to agree with me, Edge of Tomorrow.
Yes, that was a good movie too. Yeah, very sci-fi. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
It was a good movie, yeah. It was a very...
Just throwing that out there. If anybody out there disagrees, please email in and we will disagree with you.
No. I still think, though, I really like Minority Report. I think that was a very clever movie.
Yeah, it was. Obviously based on a Philip K. Dick short story.
That is true. Yeah.
And it does hold very tight to the short story, which is very unusual. Yeah. But also, I don't know if you know this, but when they made it, so they shot it on film, not hugely unusual because, I mean, it was made, what, 22 years ago, 23 years ago? Yeah. Spielberg directed it. But they sort of muted all the colors in it. They ran the film through something called a bleach bypass.
It looks like it was it washed
far
out.
Less vivid. And it's a beautiful looking film. With the fabulous Emily Mortimer. I mean, it's just a good movie. Also, not much longer, a little bit after that was Paycheck, the Ben Affleck movie, which was much maligned, also from a Philip K. Dick short story, and it is nowhere near as bad as people say. It's actually really good fun.
You like that?
Well, they've made Philip K. Dick seem a bit dumb in it. But it is a very simplistic story. And it's a gimmick story, but it works really well. And I can totally see why they made it.
Definitely better than Gigi.
Which I'm sorry to say, I haven't seen.
Me neither.
You know what? I like everybody, I started having a negative view of Ben Affleck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to the cinema because he directed an adaptation of one of my favorite books. And I thought, I'm just going to go and see what it's like. I'm going to go in with zero expectations. And he knocked it out of the park. He directed an adaptation of Gone Baby Gone, which is it's morally an absolute quagmire. And it's superb. It's so excellent. That I actually fell in love with Ben Affleck that night. And then after that, I saw Argo, which was obviously fantastic. And that guy, he really does know how to tell a story.
Yeah, that's come a long way.
He really has. He's also very tall.
Is he?
He's taller than me. Everybody looks tall to me. Functional dwarf. So, Nazim, I am going to close it there before we get into Tom Cruise's bit parts. And that is not a euphemism for anybody that is joining us late. Thank you so much for joining us. Is there a conclusion to this? Is there a conclusion where you say, here's how we avoid developing Skynet?
So that's a good point. So when I want to look into this whole future of AI, I think, so there are a lot of people that are very pessimistic about it, but I see it as a great opportunity. I think this isn't just a technical conversation. It's something that we should consider from a regulatory standpoint, a cultural standpoint. I think in the future, we're going to see more developments on the regulatory side. But at the same time, we're going to see more of an understanding of how these algorithms work. And we're going to see more and more people using them. Because as I was just telling you the example of my students, they're going to feel less intimidated by them. In essence, I think AI can be a powerful ally. And that's the way of the future. I don't know what's gonna the future is gonna, you know, unfold and what is gonna be the next big thing. I'm sure there's something even bigger coming that we haven't seen yet. But for now, I think AI is a tool that can do great things. In responsible gambling frontline, in the hospitality and tourism, and in general for the humanity. But again, it all goes back about how we use that.
Yeah. I knew you'd come back to that. I think you've hit many nails on many heads there. And I think it's regulation is going to be the difficult part of this.
That is true.
And regulation can move so slowly that there is every risk that as soon as regulation comes through, it will already be 18 months out of date. And so one of the best things regulators could do would be to use AI.
Yes.
To help stay on top of regulation. But what we might see, and there is no reason why this cannot be the case, what we might see is the evolution of regulation in all forms speeded up with the use of AI, and, you know, used intelligently, used on closed data pools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to be used as securely and as cleanly as it possibly can be to speed up the process of regulation. Because that would be one of the best things AI could ever be used for. Because people that need protection in many, many different things are being let down by the speed at which politics works. And particularly in the US, where you've got, you know, you've got groups who sit like twice a year. The fuck?
And imagine if some of them are sick or on vacation, and what happens, right?
It's absolute insanity. AI could streamline what they do, what they need to do. Sit down. Okay, here's what we need to do. Here's all the information I need. Great. Let's pass that. Or whatever. AI could be an absolute, to use a completely old-fashioned English word, it could be a boon to regulation. And gambling could lead that. I mean, it almost certainly won't, but...
That is true. The regulatory part is the part that we are working on right now. And until we get there, we are not going to be able to fully implement and optimize the AI systems that we have in place, because there is no clear guidelines of how they can be used in which areas and how much of like the patron information they can retain and how much they should have access to, and where all of that is information is being stored, right? Is it going to cloud-based? Is it going to be? And there are also environmental talks too, like these algorithms are costly. They can be very complex, and they can need a lot of, they can leave a lot of, carbon imprint in a sense. So that's why we should also consider I should say more like efficient algorithms. Complex isn't always the best answer. One of the things that I always do in my research is start with very simple analyses. You don't have to do something super, super fancy and, you know, complex just because you can. Sometimes the data speaks to you in a very simple descriptive analysis of just like, you know, some histogram is going to give you all everything that you need, or a simple regression. And sometimes you can use machine learning or deep learning to get deeper into the data and get something out of it. So these are some of the things I think we're going to see in the future. And I guess, yeah, staying tuned. You know, I have so many things going on with this patent. Hopefully if it gets approved, it's going to become one of the first early intervention systems that can be also implemented into online gambling platforms. And I'm super excited about that and how that's going to be commercialized and used.
Well, you'd be very welcome to come back and tell us about it.
Of course, yeah, I'll be happy.
Sweet. Thank you very much for joining us, Nazim.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.